Hello and welcome to Failing Boldly, a podcast that invites people to share stories about failure, resilience, and perseverance. I'm Christian Kuhn, author of the book Failing Boldly and pastor of Urban Village Church in Chicago. My guest this week is a Chicago TV icon, Steve Baskerville. For nearly 30 years, Steve was the primary weathercaster for Channel 2 here in Chicago until his retirement at the end of 2017. During his career, he won 11 regional Emmys in addition to several other awards. But before coming to Chicago, he was the weather anchor with CBS Morning News, where he was the first African-American weather anchor on a network newscast. So what happens when a weather anchor's forecast goes wrong? Steve shares lots of great stories from his years in broadcasting in this wonderfully engaging conversation. I hope you enjoy it. Well, Steve Baskerville, thank you so much for being on the Failing Boldly podcast.
Well, thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. I ask people to talk about their background first, but I'm in the intro to today's podcast, I mentioned your bio, and so folks know about your being a meteorologist. And I can't think of too many occupations where someone so publicly makes predictions about how things are going to go, and they're really leaving themselves open to how it may turn out or not.
Yeah.
And so I've
always had a motto. You know what my motto is? Partly sunny, partly cloudy, and partly accurate. If I could live up to that, then I got it made. Yeah, but a lot of it is attitude, I found. I learned that pretty early on that the relationship that you have with people who watch you every night is beyond what happens on a particular day. You know, they're with you. They are looking forward to seeing you. Okay. And if you've got bad news, well, that's part of it. If the bad news is not as bad as you said it would be, that's okay. I've found that people generally, if you're wrong about a forecast and it turns out better than you thought it would be, like if you said 6 inches of snow coming and it'll be here by morning and the sun shining the next morning and the whole day, people are very forgiving. They may tease you, but they're very forgiving. If you're wrong the other way, where you say, well, there's flurries, and then people wind up shoveling 8 inches of flurries, you know, then it's a different story. They're a little bit more upset about it. But it's one episode. You move on. It's the next day and the next several days that might be fine. So I think in my experience that people have been very forgiving of me when things don't turn out the way that I said that they would.
Did you learn that pretty quickly in your career? I would imagine that when you're, when you first get into the business, is there a temptation to think, I have to nail this, I have to get this right? Or pretty early on, you know that...
Well, you know, I was pretty fortunate. I didn't start off at the beginning doing weather. My career was pretty old school.
I read actually that you co-hosted a children's program as part of that. Yeah,
I started doing children's. I worked for the Board of Ed in the Department of Curriculum in Philadelphia for about 4 years. Wrote scripts for a radio show for kids. Hosted the kids' radio show. First real job on TV was doing a children's show. So my background, and I always thought that I would stay with kids and children's programming, but it just never paid well. Unfortunately, local stations didn't support doing locally produced children's shows. So you had to quickly try to find something else to do within the broadcasting if you wanted to survive. So my first job, I never spent any time in a small town working my way up. Never had to go through that. I started off in Philadelphia, major market. I started working at the station. I don't know if you'll remember this, but Mike Douglas had a TV show. Uh-huh. I worked at the station as a guy in his early 20s where Mike Douglas did his show, which meant that every day I saw the biggest of stars move around within the station before the show would be done. And someone told me, again, long ago, that you probably say more about who you are when you're not talking. When you're not talking about yourself, when you're not letting the world know the kind of person you are. They see more of that, the way that you treat other people and the way that you handle your business when you're not on. Yeah. And so I'm walking through the halls and I see Kirk Douglas. And you know, I'm in a green room one day and Kirk Douglas, and I'm there with a couple other intern types. And he turns and he says, I'm thirsty. Anybody want a soda? And we expected immediately, he wanted one of us to get up and go get a soda. He was going to the vending machine. Okay. He said, which way? And I never forgot, wow, now that guy's a huge star. What a decent guy. He's not full of himself, so there must be something to that. Tony Bennett was rehearsing with his band, and a couple of us walked by. And at the end of his rehearsal, he turns and he says, hey, fellas, how you doing? And we wave, and he goes, what's your names? And we give him our names. And about 20 minutes later, I'm walking down the hall, and Tony Bennett goes, hey, Steve. Blew me away.
Yeah.
That said more about who Tony Bennett was than all the ads on TV or what he could say about himself. I learned that the bigger the star, generally speaking, the better the person seemed to be, the more decently. Now, I ran into a lot of B-level and C-level entertainers who were awful and treated people unkindly and thought that they were more than what they were. But you talk about the mega stars. Generally speaking, the bigger the star, the more decent they seem to be. And I sort of tucked that away. And I always wanted to treat people fairly. And I always like being around people. That's part of the job in broadcasting. You got to like people. And especially as I moved on eventually to the weather, that really is a people-oriented job.
What made you decide you had... we're co-hosting the children's show, and it sounds like you enjoyed that, but
yes.
Wasn't paying as well as you would like. So what made you decide to go into meteorology?
It wasn't my decision.
Huh.
I'm working at the same station. So I'm doing the children's show, and that the TV show, it was an NBC affiliate in Philadelphia. And it was only to run for the summer. And we did a summer strip of shows, and it was terrific and successful. And that ended, and then I started doing specials for the station, geared to older audiences, shows for teenagers that were hour-long here and there specials, not daily work. I'm still hoping to get a job and really have a daily job in TV. Wasn't happening. And then the general manager of the station said, we got to find something for you to do. So they put me on a morning show. Now, get this. I'm full of names to drop. Sorry.
That's okay.
I hate the name
drop. No, that's all right.
But the morning show that I was a part of, and I get this, it was me and Mari Povich.
Okay.
Mari Povich, at one time, Mari Povich to this day was one of the best anchors I ever worked with. A lot of people don't know about that part of his career.
Yeah, they only know him as the talk show host.
Yes, but he was a pretty solid journalist. But anyway, Mari did this morning talk show. And I did features on the show, and that turned out well for me. And the general manager came racing to me one day and said, we got to get you into more of the day. I got it. Weather. And I said, what are you talking about? Weather. You'd be a great weatherman. And it was his idea to, you remember that show, That Girl? There used to be a show, That Girl. Things would happen to her and all these wonderful, I want That Girl. And they'd point to her and then suddenly she's found herself into some other wonderful role. Well, I was that guy. You know, I want that guy to do this. And so there was the dean of science at Drexel University in Philadelphia was one of the forecasters for D-Day. That's how credentialed he was. And at one time did weather on TV. He said, I like that guy. Why don't you pay me to teach him the weather? What a great way to start in learning it. And I would meet one-on-one with him a couple days a week after his classes, and he taught me weather. And eventually I went on the air, and if I said something that made sense, he'd call and say, that was wonderful, the way you phrased it. That's exactly what's going to happen. If I said something ridiculous, he'd call and say, that was the craziest thing I'd ever heard. Where did you get that? And we'd talk about it. It was nice to have that kind of person in your corner.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, if I'm lucky, I'll keep this weather job for a year. And it turns out that I have done that longer than anything else.
Yeah. Did you go into it thinking, well, this is, correct me if I'm wrong in this, my sense, I always wonder for folks, the difference between weatherman and meteorologist, for the
yes.
person who just gets up and reads the screen
yes.
and points to the right places versus those, and maybe it's both and, versus those who are really interested in the process of forecasting and getting a sense of what's coming?
Well, the deal that I made with the station when I met with this person who was teaching me the weather is that I wanted to know what I was talking about.
Right.
And I wasn't going to have support to create the forecast for me anyway, so I had to learn it. So that was a pretty informal way of learning, but I spent several months with him sort of training me. I eventually, the Mississippi State University has a program for broadcast meteorology. And I eventually got my seal through Mississippi State.
Okay.
And that's the way a lot of TV weather people that you see now have gone through Mississippi State for that sort of training. And I don't have a, all of us usually, the bottom line is that we really rely heavily on the Weather Service, all of us, because they're the ones who are working 24 hours a day. We are in for several hours a day, don't have the time to analyze and really get down to particulars about the weather. So you have to have something to fall back on. And the Weather Service has a great relationship with TV broadcasters. And there was a time when my impression was that the Weather Service didn't want to have a relationship with folks on TV because it was, you know, TV people.
Right.
But because of social media and this electronic age that really it blossomed within the last 10 to 20 years, we're all in the same pool together. So we spend time putting the weather show together, but we don't spend a great deal of time analyzing and coming up with what the National Weather Service can do.
When you were doing segments on shows, and then is this what, it sounds like this would be a transition then. Now you're doing live TV.
Yes.
And how was that transition?
Well, it was scary. Yeah. And I thought I eventually, the other thing that I didn't tell you was that before I started working on that daily morning show with Mari, there was a period of time between the children's show and that established morning show that I was co-hosting another version of a morning show with a woman who had experience in, she had more TV experience than I did. And I was terrible. I won't say she was terrible, but I knew I was bad. Imagine you're doing a show and the hardest question you ask is, what do elephants eat? You suddenly are talking to city councilmen and the mayor and major personalities. I wasn't ready for that. Mm. And I knew I wasn't, but I wasn't going to say no because I wanted to break in. But it was going badly, and I could tell. And we didn't really do the show for a long time, maybe about a half a year or so. And I called us into the office separately. And I thought, well, this is it. It's over for me because I know I'm going to be fired. And I was told, well, you know, this isn't working. You're not going to do this anymore. And the woman who was a program manager said to me, I don't know what it is, but you've got it. Mm. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, some people have it, and you just have to find a place to use that personality or whatever it is that you've got as talent. And we don't want to let you go. We just want to find a way for you to express yourself that's going to be better for you. And I went, phew.
I was going to say, what a range of emotions that must have been. Oh. Going in thinking you're going to get fired and then getting some affirmation.
Yes.
And saying, you've got it.
Yes.
We just need to figure out where that is.
And I realized that I had to work on it and develop and learn as much as I could. So the whole way, look, nobody on my block or in my neighborhood ever was in TV. It was all sort of a pipe dream anyway. Mm. I had more relatives telling me that I should learn how to fix TVs. That's where the security is.
Yeah.
You mean you're going to be on TV? That's the riskiest kind of occupation, if you call it that, that you could choose. But I was pretty determined about creating a career. And fortunately, things worked out. But there were a lot of places along the way where I thought I would be fired, or I thought it wouldn't work, or it was so disastrous that I better think about other things to do.
Yeah. I think I read, it was in the mid-80s, that you were the weather anchor on CBS,
yes.
National.
Yes.
And that I read that you were the first African-American weather anchor on a national
yes.
newscast.
Yes.
Can I ask about that experience and getting into the business and being an African-American? And I don't know if growing up, if that's one reason why people said you should think about fixing rather than being on TV.
Well, it was an attitude about, it's just that you don't know where those jobs come from. I mean, you daydream about being on television. That's something that folks in Hollywood do, or you grow up somewhere else. You're not, in the city where I grew up in West Philadelphia, in which was a vibrant place to grow up with a lot of support and people around. But nobody was choosing broadcasting as a career. So that was really stepping out there and taking a chance. And so it was more security, and it was more security in learning how to get a government job, work at the post office. I had friends who worked at the post office, had great jobs, great secure places to be. You looked for security as opposed to things you fantasized. But I was always encouraged to keep working. I worked at the Veterans Administration, sorting checks for a period of time. I've had all sorts of jobs. And at night, I would send off resumes, and I'd write letters, and I would keep working at it. So it takes some perseverance to try to break through. But I saw it in my head. Don't ask me where that came from, but I just knew that if I didn't stop, that I had enough talent and I had what it would take to do the things that I was dreaming about. And so I just kept working at it.
What's particularly admirable is that, particularly once you became a meteorologist and in that field, you didn't see a whole lot of people who looked like you.
No.
And so you were the one who were kind of blazing some of those trails.
Well, yeah. I mean, there were other, that had been a problem with television for a long time, especially for African Americans. We didn't have a wide range of role models representing people that we knew and grew up surrounded by. Athletes and singers and actors, a little bit easier path than other occupations. I don't know whether I thought of being the first in any way of doing anything. I was just wanting to get the job, create a career, knew I had what it took, and just kept working at it. I'd see people like Ed Bradley on television. Mm-hmm. Ed Bradley was from Philadelphia, as a matter of fact, and had been a part of CBS. You'd see the occasional other anchor here or there that was a black anchor that you could look at and say, well, that person's doing it. I remember I was told all sorts of things, too. You're going to have to change your name and shave that mustache, somebody told me once along the way. And I wound up doing neither.
Yeah,
I just didn't think I'd have to do it. But you're told all sorts of things. Ed Bradley was one of the first on-air major television personalities that not only had a mustache, he had a beard and he had an earring.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was non-verbally telling you that kind of stuff didn't matter.
Yeah. You said earlier, you talked about a relationship that you had with the viewer, and I find that to be true. Particularly, I mean, with TV these days are very different than it was when you were on. But certainly, the relationships that people have with either news anchors, but also with meteorologists too, if they tune in, especially if there's severe weather.
Yes.
And so I'm curious: were you cognizant of that? Did you know that if there's a big storm coming, or people are truly concerned about a tornado, something like that, I need to be calm and I need to have that stable presence for folks.
Well, yeah, I realized that that was part of, you don't want to be hysterical about it.
Right.
You want to be serious about it. And I had some folks around me along the way that had some great credits on television. I worked with Harry Volkman for a number of years, and Harry, if I'm not mistaken, I think Harry was the first person to go on the air on television and say there's a tornado coming. Mm. So, and he grew up in the middle of the country. And so he knew all about that kind of weather. And I could see, and once again, I could see how he carried himself and how he dealt with it more than him telling me directly. I could just look and see how he handled it and sort of learned how to do it his way as well. He had a great way of keeping a rapport with viewers, being pretty much at ease with folks, and, but still getting the message out there no matter how serious it was. But yeah, that could be very draining at the end of the day when you know that you've got tornado watches in effect all afternoon and evening. You know the kind of day you're going to have. You try to prepare for it. You know you're not going to go home until the last warning is over. So those would be some really long days. And you feel such relief when it was by. That's the worst part of the calendar, when you've got spring or late summer weather that includes tornadoes. I'd much rather deal with winter storms always, because those are slow evolving events. People are generally in a better mood even with the blizzard coming. They know they've got to prepare. They know they've got days to get ready. They know that it'll start snowing in the morning. It's snow all day long. It's not anything that's going to suddenly strike. So they've got time to grasp it. And you can have more. It's a different relationship, but you're on the air all day long. It's a less intense feeling when you're on the air talking about that kind of storm. But tornadoes, I remember covering the Plainfield tornadoes. I was one of the first to be on the scene after the tornado had swept through Plainfield. And I can remember what that looked like. I mean, houses looked like dollhouses, where you could take the outside of it completely off. One room, you'd see beds made up, clothes still hanging up. The room right next to it was a mess. Things, bowling balls out in the middle of the field, and parts of rooms yards away, and people wondering if their daughter down the street got out of the house in time. You don't sleep for a while after that.
Yeah. Before we started recording, you mentioned that, and I don't know for how many years you did this, but you were on the 5 p.m., 6 p.m., and 10 p.m.
Yes.
Newscast. To me, that would seem draining to do that day after day after day. And so I'm wondering, what kept you going? What, I guess it's true for anybody, whatever the vocation is, but particularly being on air, maybe you just get used to it, but it would seem like you're exercising a different part of your personality, that you're on, literally on.
Yeah.
And then after a while, that would be draining. But were you able just to keep it up? And
eventually it was draining because I chose to retire, not so much because of the daily performance being too much, but because I wanted to spend more time doing other things. But doing a show day after day, I'm serious when I say this. The Friday would roll around, and the only thing that would motivate me to come back in Monday was hoping that I would be better than I was Friday. I didn't want to be perfect, but I always wanted to be near perfect.
Yeah.
Every day. I always wanted to give my best and be ready and to, I'm a pretty anxious and, hard to please person. I don't like to watch myself.
Okay.
It makes me crazy. I always see the flaws.
So are you pretty self-critical?
Oh my goodness. Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the motivation to keep going. I always wanted to be, if I had a great show on Tuesday, I wanted to do the same thing on Wednesday. If Wednesday was lousy for whatever reason, I had to come back Thursday and be better than that. I never felt totally at ease, because then you get lazy about it. And I think the job wouldn't have been handled as best I could. So I always had to have a little bit of tension there driving me to be as good, at least, as I was the day before. And I enjoyed it. It's the performance. That when people tune in every night, they don't care how long your day was. They don't care what it took to be ready. They want to spend time with you. And that's I always thought about, I never thought about millions of people watching me. I always thought about how people watch TV. Most people watch TV alone, or maybe there's another person with them, or a couple. And they're very relaxed. And they're choosing to let you in the house by turning to you. And so that relationship is important. And I think that's why my my attitude was so so relaxed. That's a relaxed setting. It's not tension driven. And who knows how most folks have a day of stress and tension, and they're not turning you on to grade you and have a, that was wrong. They're not grading you as you perform. They want to welcome you in almost like a friend. So I sort of had that in the back of my head every time I'd be on the air.
And it sounds like maybe because of this, because of that relationship that you built with them, particularly over years, if you had a quote unquote failed forecast and were off, really off, people didn't necessarily.
I never had anybody yell at me. I'm serious. Mm-hmm. Maybe here or there. Nobody ever got mad at me because something was wrong. Nobody yelled and said, hey, you said this and it didn't happen that way. I was lucky that way. I never had any bad feelings from folks. And I think, once again, it has to do with the relationship.
Yeah.
That you. Do you remember Willard Scott?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Willard Scott did weather for years on NBC, and I did weather with him. I'll never forget one day on the 3rd of July. And he was in town in Philadelphia talking about the big holiday weekend, and we're going to be at Independence Mall, and it's going to be a great weekend. And we're standing out there at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and right in front of us are the darkest, heaviest clouds you've ever seen moving toward us. And about a minute before we go on, he says to me, I'm not going to talk about rain. You can. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I'm not going to ruin everybody's weekend. You do that. And I said, but it's probably going to be pouring on us as we're talking. He said, I don't care. I'm not going to mention rain. He said, I'm not. I'm going to be as up as I can. Now, but that was the way that I sort of learned from him that here's another great saying I heard along the way. Remember that it's the storm that goes away, not you.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So it comes and it will go.
And it speaks to a lot, I think, just the trust that you build up, whether, and I think this is true for in my field, in the ministry, if people trust you and know that they can count on you, you are able to have deeper conversations and maybe even conflict.
Yes.
Because they know they can trust that you're there for them. And I would imagine, even though you are not literally in a relationship, that people have watched you over the years and build up a trust in you.
There are many times I've been thanked about, you know, thanked for my service. And I said, well, I never looked at it that way, as if I'm giving you a service that you needed to thank me for. And he said, no, all you've done. And and just what you said, you know, those long days that you'll have at certain times, and when you have to tell us things that we don't want to hear, at least you're there to tell it. So it's a great relationship. I think that's what I miss most by being retired from it. I've always liked being around people, and I've spent as many hours out in the field and on location as I have in the studio, just being with people. And everybody, I think, has got a story. Everybody. We could go out in the street right now. It may not be directly from their experience, but they know somebody in the family or a friend or someone who's done something that is incredible if you talk to them long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always sort of kept that floating in the back of my head too.
Yeah. Well, I always end these conversations by asking folks to share a failure story, a time in your life, whether it's professional or personal, that you remember that things just did not work out at all. And so I would imagine you have at least a few of being in live TV. But
well, I learned, we talk about attitude and how you handle the responsibility of being on the air and how you get over things. I learned long ago. Back in the early days, I had to do a segment live on TV with a studio audience with a guy named Jeffrey Holder. Jeffrey Holder was famous for, these are Cola Nuts.
Okay, yeah.
And it was, I think it was a 7-Up commercial, Cola Nuts. A lot of people will remember that. He was a big, friendly man, and he was an actor, but he had a great voice, and he did a lot of narration. He, for the first time, had this smoothie drink or some concoction that his name was attached to, and was promoting it.
It was his own product, or was he with a voiceover for it?
No, it was more associated with him as his product.
Oh, okay.
And so this is a big deal. It was more than just his voice. And so we're there with the studio audience. We're live. And we put on, you put the bananas in, you put the grapes, and we're putting the ingredients in the blender. And we're going to give samples out to the audience. And we turn the blender on, and we get it just right. It's beautiful color. And he says, let's take it out. And we lift it, and the whole bottom falls out. The whole bottom is
live.
And it's live. And it's this man who is coming to promote. That's the only reason he's there. And I looked at him, and that's another one of those cases where I thought, I'm going to be fired immediately. As soon as this is over, I'm gone. But he looked at me and said, that's great. Oh, that's a sign of how wonderful it is. And he turned that moment into something positive, and the audience laughed, and it made it even more comfortable than if it hadn't happened. And I sort of learned there that you could turn some of these failures or failings that you have into something else if you've got the attitude, the right attitude about it. So that one stands out in my mind more than any. I've been with a group of kids on a Saturday doing a forecast live, and they're all at a Little League baseball field. And it's a Saturday, so there are no teachers involved. There are parents around, but these are like 100 kids on their own. And I made a deal with them. I said, look, when we go on live, let me do the weather, and I'm going to give you the signal. I'll raise my hand, and then you can yell and scream and hi, Mom, and do all of that. And they said, okay, we got that understanding. I go on live, and the kids are as quiet as can be behind me, and the anchors are saying, look at that. You ought to be a teacher. Look at how much control you've got. And I said, yes, this is something. And I turned to a little boy about 5 years old, and I said, and he's cute with his oversized uniform on. And I said, you're going to get a hit today. And he went, yeah. And I took my arm, and I said, go get him. And I raised it. And that was a signal I was giving the kids to go crazy.
Oh.
I forgot that.
Yeah.
They didn't forget. And they're throwing hats in the air and bats and yelling and hi, Mom, and screaming. And I never got to do the weather that day. It was so out of control. It went from control to no control. Horrible. Awful. But you come back again. You sort of turn it into what you can.
Right.
And you come back and start over the next day.
That's great.
So I've been very lucky. I have not had lots of incidents that have really been critically real harmful or failings that I couldn't get over easily. I've had obstacles in the way, but I haven't had failures to recover from. It was really, I hope I haven't made it seem easier than it was to get started. You know, I worked pretty hard to, I had a lot of people tell me no. I think the failures came in the rejection.
Mm.
Starting off and looking for work and saying, hey, I want to be a television performer. And getting no's over, you know, letters of sorry, there's nothing here. Or, well, we'll see what we can do later. And over and not stopping. And someone along the way told me, you know where the job is? I said, where? The job is that last resume you think you shouldn't send off because you've sent 30 others.
Yeah.
And they all said no.
Yeah.
The job's a 31st letter.
Yeah.
So you can't give up. You can rest and recuperate from the rejections, but don't give up. I think that perseverance really takes you far.
Yeah. That's a good note to end on. Well, Steve Baskerville, thank you so much for joining me in this conversation.
It's over?
It's over.
See, what happens is weather people get 2.5 minutes a night. And when there's nobody saying 2.5 minutes is up, they'll talk for 2.5 days. So this can't possibly be over yet.
Well, I gave you 34 minutes. And so,
great. Yeah. I wish I had this much time on the air. This is perfect.
Great. Thank you again, Steve.
Thank you.
Yep. And that's this week's podcast. Thanks again to Steve for giving his time for this conversation. I hope you will subscribe to this podcast. And also, if you have a moment, I have so very few reviews on various places, including iTunes. So if you have a chance and can go on iTunes and write a review, that would be great. You can also learn more about my book and the ministry I'm a part of by going to my podcast and my website, christiankuhn.com. Thanks again for listening.